Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of the We Talk Music Podcast on the air and in your ear. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo, and with me, Mr. Brett Podcast, the King of the Casters.
That's
Brett,
right.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing great.
But it's not about us, Brett. It's never about us. It is about the guest. He is the guitarist for one of my favorite bands of all time.
Woo!
Extremely happy to welcome Jakob Binzer onto the airs. Godau, one more time, I'll say it to
yeah.
you. It's a little English to you.
Godau. Godau, yeah. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me. Nice to talk to you.
It's, as I say, I can tell you where DAD first came to me was because I was born in Denmark. And
okay.
Moved to Canada just before my third birthday. My uncle used to come to Denmark, and whenever he'd come and visit us, he would bring me some Danish albums. And at one point, he brought me, and probably about 1988 there, when I was in high school, brought me Draw the Circle.
Okay, yeah.
And that was, and he said, this band is making a lot of waves in Denmark. And I looked at it, and it took me, admittedly, a little while. I was a little skeptical. And what is this, right? And I popped it in there, and I listened to it. And then I listened to it again and again and again, and was immediately just, this is fantastic. I remember taking it over to Brett's place, where we used to go, and we should be going to school, and instead skipped and played video games.
Okay.
And, listening to that album and, you know, songs like 10 Knots, listening to it over and over again, just laughing our asses off, you know, at the lyrics. God's Favorite, Black Crickets.
These
songs, they were just so different but catchy. And so when we heard that you had a record album that was coming out with, and we're finally going to be able to get a real release here, we were looking forward to seeing you come to North America and see the success that we anticipated you would have, because we knew how good you were. And then, of course, No Field Left for the Pilgrims came out and blew our minds.
Yeah.
So this is why, as I say, I'm so excited to have you on now. I've talked too much because people aren't here for me. a little background on
that's amazing. Amazing story. I mean, most people in America, they the first album, the first DAD album they know is No Field Left for the Pilgrims. So that's quite unique that you started all already with DAD Draws a Circle.
Yeah, DAD Draws a Circle, and then, as I say, I remember when my cousin came to visit in the mid-90s, he said you had a new album out called Help Yourself Fish. I said, how come I can't find this here?
Yeah.
He told me he would buy it and ship it to me. And then he went and he bought it. He told me he had it. He was going to ship it out to me for you. And, he didn't. I had to go over there and get it. I had to visit. When I visited in Denmark, it was like 5 years later. He finally gave it to me.
I
didn't forget. I'd be listening to it the whole time. He didn't want to give up the album. It was such a good one. So, we have a long history, but that's why I'm so excited. We're in this day and age here with your new album out.
But can you tell me back then when you listened to DAD Draws, were you like a young kid in high school?
Yeah, I was 15 when I heard Draws a Circle. We're old now.
But that's quite young to pick up on an album like that. I mean, but it's... it's. I think that's an amazing story to that 15-year-old kid in America picks up on an album like that. But was it a big change for you the next album, the No Field Left for the Pilgrims? Do you think it sounded like a whole new band, or what did you think?
Absolutely. But it was a very big change for us. It was hard to find information about you, we knew the new album was coming out. I remember me and Brett going and both picking up the album as soon as it came out, and we listened to it, and it was a big surprise. But as soon as you hear Sleeping My Day Away, even though it's different, style wise, it's there's no way you're not going to be in it. And then you get off to Point of View and these other songs, and so it took a little while to go, okay, there's still the DAD DNA in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was definitely different. But it felt like a growth. Like you guys were just growing.
Okay.
That's very interesting.
I think. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had that sound where it's like, you know, I think where you're trying to break a new market, and so you've definitely changed that sound. But I mean, when you hear your guitar, there's no doubt that it is DAD.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, but we were so young, and we got into playing in a band more for like, you know, being in a band. We weren't like musicians in a way. We just formed a band, and then okay, we have to learn how to play. Let's see, how do we do that? And so it was like a band thing. So the music evolved as we, you know, figured out how to play along the way.
Well, that's it. It draws a circle, as they say. Songs like 10 Knots. I mean, nobody does a song like that.
No.
You know, there's nobody, you know.
But thank you for doing it. That's most important.
Yes, we love it, you know. But there's no song like that on No Fear Left the Pilgrim quite like that. But this, the sense of humor, you know, it was one of the things that always, I think, impressed me was, you know, despite you were coming from Denmark, but the lyrics were so clever.
Yeah.
You know, always, and so much the tongue-in-cheek sense of humor, you know, you know, Siamese Twin and songs like that were still funny, but I guess more subtle than some of the songs on Draws a Circle.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, and you went on to Risking It All, and that felt like, again, like just like your next logical step as musicians. No Fuel Left for the Pilgrims and Risking It All, were they very much influenced by trying to break what you were doing, trying to break into North America?
I don't think we were that conscious about wanting to break America, but I think that the whole rock scene of the time inspired us, because in the years before that, we were very inspired by the punk influence and the kind of the spaghetti western atmosphere, the western and all the cowboy myths. And we, growing up in Denmark, being exposed to that Americana stuff through the television, we never been to America, so we got some kind of a filtered version. You know, all the spaghetti western thing was more, maybe it was more Italian than American almost.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that, the Ennio Morricone, Sergio Leone thing, and we sort of mixed that up by chance with the punk attitudes, and the cartoons. We were so young, and we were still all the lyrics came also from like this whole cartoon universe. So it was a mix of all those things, and then in a couple of years later, we started writing for No Fuel Left the Pilgrims. And we were getting into more, a little heavier music. So we sort of like transformed in that direction. And it wasn't a conscious choice. We thought that we wanted to play a little more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But still we had the lyrics are still they had this twist. It's not the, you know, your average rock lyric still on the... you know, No Fuel and Risking It All.
No, never. No. Normally. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that, like I say, it was always so clever. We could always find there was a different point of view, to use a phrase. But you always had a different point of view in how you were putting the songs together. You know, both the music and the lyrics always felt like it was just a little different side take.
Yeah, and we were very conscious about trying to be a little different and not trying to be your average rock band. And in a way, I think that made us very interesting to people like you who understand the whole thing. But also, I think it also meant that we didn't become mainstream. We didn't break America.
You think that's the reason why?
It's part of the reason.
Yeah.
Part of the reason is that we didn't go all in on the rock thing.
Mm. Mm. That's interesting. You know, I can say, like I say, we got, you know, Risking It All. And no, I remember when Risking It All came out, I was so excited again, you know, another album from you guys. And I was telling somebody this, I guess this one would have come out when I was in my last year of high school.
Yeah.
And telling people, oh, you got to listen to this. You got to hear this. And they waited. I remember one guy, I was in school with a friend of mine, you know, just a school friend. And he saw the Grower Pay video. And he said, okay. He said, this is awesome. That song's awesome. He loved it. And that's, you know, and then he kept on waiting to see it again. Mm-hmm. And he never saw it again. And I actually said to him, well, if you want to, he's like, but the song was so great. I haven't seen it again. I want to hear it again. Well, go buy the damn album. You want to hear it again. But he just kept waiting to see it again, and they never aired it again. Same thing here in Canada. We had something called what was it called, Brett? The heavy metal show.
Which one? Power Hour.
Yeah, it was Power Hour. At one point, they were supposed to do, I think it was the video for Sleeping My Day Away, and they were talking about it, and they said next week we would have it, and I turned in, and they said it didn't show up. And then they just said, but DAD is a good straight-ahead rock and roll band. So when I think about how do you get into America if you don't have all these, the right support, especially when you're a little different.
Yes.
You know, and they already don't know where to put you in. They put you in with, you know, the hair metal bands and these things, which is not really what you were. You know, I think it's got to be so hard to get across here. I mean, that frustrated me. You know, it wasn't until YouTube years later that I finally saw Sleeping My Day Away.
Okay.
Video, you know.
Yeah. I think that... I think we got a fair push from Warner Brothers when they released No Fuel Left for the Pilgrims. They gave us a chance, but I think I think when you listen to Sleep My Day Away and you listen to the other records of the time, you can tell that it sounds different. You can tell that we're Danish, and I think maybe we were just a bit too Danish. We weren't like. We were not sleazy and hair metal enough. I think we have this intellectual twist on it, and I don't think that didn't go well with the Americans on a broader spectrum back then.
I think they're
But I also think that it's fundamentally we have a different take on rock and roll in, for example, Denmark and America. It's a different cultural thing. Rock and roll is very, I think it's very fundamental in the culture in America, and it's serious. You don't make fun with rock and roll, and I can understand that. But we have a different tradition in Denmark where you know we didn't invent rock and roll, so. We have like maybe we have our roots somewhere else, rooted in something other cultural things, and I can understand that. But we didn't get it back then, I'd say. So if we would have wanted to really break America, I think we should have sounded a little less Danish, actually.
Yeah, because there was a lot of bands at the time that came from like Sweden and stuff like that that were able to like other countries around there that were able to. I think they actually just copied the sound way more so. Yes. Whereas you guys never copied any sounds. You were always still being you. Just in the U.S. in that case.
Yeah,
and I know that's what Mo and I always appreciated. Was like we were you know amongst that group of fans where it was just like yes, this is perfect, this is great music, this is what we want. So
they can be different, you know. But yeah, it's true that you know it's tougher to break in, and I remember people kept on comparing you when they would compare you guys to AC/DC, and you know, especially you know, your brother Jesper, and say he sounds like Bon Scott. And I never understood that, honestly. I never heard it myself. I don't hear, he sounds like him. He doesn't sound like, and you guys sound like you. And I never, But I think that's just the thing in North America, is very much so. When they try and market you, they want to tell somebody you're like this. Yeah. And AC/DC, especially the old AC/DC, really had a lot of sense of humor in their songs too.
Yes. Yeah.
So I could see that.
Yeah.
But style-wise, I just, like I say, I did not hear it myself.
No, I think that like you guys say, that the style of Sleep My Day Away, Point of View, Girl Nation, those songs are, I think that's the unique style of DAD. That's if you want to, if you should give an example of a DAD sound, then that's the sound I'd say there, which is like the clean guitar twangy sound and the melodic like hard, heavy rock, but it's not too metal. Yeah.
And the bass being very prominent in the songs too, which is not something that here was, you know, you usually didn't hear the bass featured as much as you do in your songs.
Yeah.
So it's, but now you're back with the new album.
Yes.
A Prayer for the Loud, which is why we are here, because this is very much, you know, classic DAD. You know, is how I would put it. It has that sound and that feel, very much classic DAD. I think it has all the elements, and I see the reviews online of being very strong. It's your first album since 2011, so
which is craziness, bad craziness.
That bad craziness there.
Yeah, that's
the time. You guys are, you know, but you never stopped working.
No.
Right? You never stopped touring and being active. So why so long?
Yeah, why so long? Yes. We never stopped working. We toured, we've toured every year, and we have been doing the summer festivals every year, and we've played shows all over Europe. And we actually started working on this album in 2015. So, but you know, we are four guys, and we have to agree on when to work on what, and you can't write an album when you're on tour, so you have to take some time off the road to finish an album, and we just couldn't get together and get it done before now. So that's the only explanation. It's not a conscious decision. It's just came out that way. So that's why.
So if you start working in 2015, how do you guys write songs? Is it do you all get together, or do you bring different? Everybody brings a different song that they started working on, or how is it? Writing.
We bring ideas. It can be just a riff. It could be like a verse, some chords with a melody, or it can be maybe two, an A part and B part, and then we jam it out together and see what works and what doesn't work, and we record it when we play it, and we just try things and listen back to it. And we discuss and we argue and we throw things around in the rehearsal room, and we spend a lot time being aggravated and angry, and but we all know that in the end, you can, when you listen back to the material, it's quite obvious what will end up being a song and what will not. And most of the time, in the end, we do agree. But I can tell you, in the first demo session we did in early 2015, I think we recorded six songs, and none of them made it on the album.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, whether you recorded anything early that you maybe heard again in like 2018, and we're like, oh, yeah. Did you change anything else that you had written back then, or was it all pretty much just fresh stuff at that point?
No, I said we sort of get together. We have ideas. We get together. We work on it, and we go record it in the demo our demo session, like 1 or 2 days in the studio, and then we start all over again. with new ideas. And sometimes we go back and take a song and change it a bit. But we start with a blank page when we start writing an album, pretty much. Unless, but I can tell you what rarely happens is that one riff will survive to the next session. The song that's called The Sky's Made of Blues,
mm-hmm.
that riff was originally written for the last album.
Oh.
So that's pretty old.
Yeah. That's probably my second favorite. I think The Real Me is my favorite track, but that's probably my second favorite track on the album. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
So how many songs in total did you guys have then?
I think we demoed maybe 20, 22 songs, something like that.
Oh, wow.
When we started recording for real, we brought 14 songs, and it was pretty obvious after like a month that these 11 songs on the album, those were the ones that would be finished for the album.
So it's interesting to me. You say start writing in 2015, so 4 years, and in that time, Jesper released a solo album. So you know, those songs were any of like is that a weird thing? You're writing songs, you're going don't take your best songs and put them on your solo album, don't. Or is that you know? Yeah. Is that what was that like? Is that something? When did you know he was going to be doing that? Were you just encouraging, or was it how did that go about?
No, I didn't know, and he was not very. He just went on and did that, and I think that there should be a space, and everybody should be able to do things, other collaborations and whatever they want to do. Just like in DAD, I just think that you have to make appointments and you keep them. That's the whole thing. Otherwise, you can do what you want to do, and I don't think that I'm not protective about it in that way. I think that people should, if I feel like I write a song which is better for another project, then that should be fine. I know when I write a song which would be good for DAD, or if I find a guitar line that would be good for DAD, then it's DAD material. I think that you should be decent enough to think that yourself without anybody else being grumpy about it.
yeah, because that's one of the questions that I was going to ask about, like, when you get together to write songs, is there like a thought process of how you make DAD songs versus just regular songs?
Yeah, well, I can only speak for myself, and I'm very I try to I separate it. I write for other stuff as well, and I play with other people. But when we start writing a new DAD album, I thought of imagining in my head what I wanted to sound like. Then I tried to write in that direction, and sit at home and record things, ideas on my in my home studio. So I don't. I'm quite focused on that. Material, and then I can work on something else. At the same time, that's not a problem.
So, what are some of the songs from this album that you had the most hand in crafting then from the beginning?
Prayer for the Loud, for instance,
was one that you brought to the table, I guess.
So all the chords and the guitar stuff and the riff, yeah.
Great, it's a great title. So of course, I guess that's why it's the title of the album. It's just, did you come up with the title early on, or was it?
You know, actually, the lyrics had that line. "Prayer for the Loud" was in the lyrics, and. And I don't usually come up with titles. And I mean, we have different areas that we cover, and I don't feel that coming with a title is not my area. I do more like, you know, I do the guitar stuff and someone else does the title stuff. And but I thought that it was a cool line. So I asked, so I said to Jesper and Stig, hey, could the album be called Prayer for the Loud? I thought that sounded cool.
Yeah,
so that was
title.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's one of my favorite songs on the album, because I just love the straight out, you know, rock and that kind of, I can imagine it would be awesome in concert.
Yeah, we just started playing it live and it really feels good. I can tell you that.
What are some of the other songs off this that you're planning on playing live?
We are playing, we just did a showcase in Denmark on the release day. We played 7 of the songs. We played, the ones we didn't play was If the World Just and Happy Days in Hell and Drug for the Heart.
You can't play too many slow songs, you know.
Well, I really liked your guitar in on Musical Chairs. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's very fun to play. It's a real riff song, and it's fast. And to play with that, it's great. It has a lot of energy. It's really fun.
So do you?
Go ahead, Brett.
Well, I was going to say, do you prefer playing the fast songs, or like, is it just something that kind of gets more into your bloodstream as opposed to playing the slow songs?
No, it can be both. It's more difficult to play the slower songs because you have to. And there's so much space in the songs that, and it's just more difficult to play slow than it is to play fast, actually. So you have to be more concentrated. And but I like doing both. It can be quite a challenge to play a festival in daylight in the afternoon and play a slow song because then it can be very hard to keep focus and have people keeping focus. It just sort of like vaporizes into the air playing like a slow, soft song. So, but if you're inside in a concert hall, in a club, and you could dim the lights, then it can be really beautiful to play these songs.
Yeah, you have a lot of, you know, Laugh and a Half is one of the songs that over the years I thought that was the song actually that was going to break you in North America.
Okay.
You know, for sure, you know, and, but even then, I suppose it has, you know, like the lyric, you know, by the light of the yellow beard, they just tell jokes I never want to hear. It speaks to me, but maybe it's too Danish for everybody else.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know, but you tell me if it's too Danish. For me, I also think that that's a song that it doesn't have the, I mean, it's not a cartoonish song. It could be like, it's not too funny. I think it that could be, and it did break us a bit outside Denmark too. It is a hit in other countries as well. Yeah.
What other countries did it find success in?
Well, the in Sweden actually. That's a bit. It's a very big song in Sweden. So when we are in Sweden, we have to play it all the time.
You know, that is interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I remember here's the thing about it. I remember one time playing it for somebody when we were driving, they said, that's the perfect driving song.
Okay.
You know, and I thought, that's a good, I mean, it is. You know, mm-hmm. it's one of those songs, you know, if you have a long drive like you do in Canada, anywhere, you know, that's the one where you turn it up, play.
Ah, cool.
Empty Heads is probably my favorite of your songs overall.
Okay. I see. Yeah.
That's one of those, it's just one of those things that the second that I heard that, I was just, it kind of encapsulates everything, especially of the slower songs.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's that was it was. We don't play it that often because it's not an easy song to play. But it was a big radio hit in Denmark back then. I remember.
Do you you know, some of these, like, that's the thing about some of your songs. You have that great riff, like the opening riff. You know, obviously, Ill Will. Was that your riff? Obviously, that you come up with that.
No, Ill Will. No, that was Stee's riff.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yes. That's a great. Just, you know, you got that. That was the song that most caught me off guard on that album, obviously, because it's, you know, right, yes, at the end of it. So it's so different, but yes, it's so damn good, right? It's just, it just has that good, heavy, heavy, heavy riff, you know.
It's a great riff. It's a completely, it's very, it's a really monstrous, it's stupid in a good way.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, obviously, Bad Craziness is another great riff. One of my favorite songs, 1900 and Yesterday.
Yeah.
The opening, you know, is, did you, again, that one yours?
Yeah, I made that, the guitar line, yes, the jangly stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you know, I did that, and you, I did it. Actually, the song didn't start with that. The song started with the chords and the melody, and I composed the guitar riff on top of that because I thought it could be great with some Birds kind of 12-string guitar ish, and I worked a lot on it until I thought it was right. And it's been quite a long time in the studio getting it right, but it's a catchy hook. And if we play it in Denmark, people recognize it, and it gets people get excited to hear that opening.
Are there different?
I must agree, it's one of my favorite songs too.
Are there different songs that you can play that you would play in Denmark versus, say, the Monsters of Rock cruise?
Yeah, yes, because in Denmark, people know the whole story. On the Monsters of Rock cruise, it is mostly No Fuel Left for the Pilgrims and a few other songs. And when you play Monsters of Rock, then you play for 1 hour. So you can't get too much caught up in history. You don't have the time. And so, and people have traveled from Nebraska, South America, and wherever, and they just hope they want to hear Sleep My Day Away and Girl Nation, and they will hear those songs. We will play them for them.
I mean, there's no doubt. So apparently, Mo, this is what we need to do. We need to go to the Monsters of Rock cruise, and then we need to go to Denmark so that we get both sides of the story.
Yes. Monsters of Rock cruise, you know, I can, that one, that'll be the harder one. In Denmark, I have family I can stay with all over the place. You, Brett, I don't know what you'll do. I have, what is it? You know, my 19 cousins or something in Denmark alone. So, yeah, so you won't have to worry about putting me up, but you might have to let Brett stay at your house.
Okay. One of the questions, like, how long did it take for you to feel comfortable and to really gel into your guitar style?
Yeah, it just evolved over time. I think I started when I was like 13 years old, and as I said, we were just hanging out. Me and my brother, we were hanging out at the local like a club you go to. And they had the rehearsal rooms. They had table tennis. They had, you know, billiard table and that kind of place there. You can just be creative. And we just wanted to form a band because we were into skateboarding and the whole punk thing. And so let's make a band and figure out how to play. So and then I remember I got into another school. In primary school, and there was some really good musicians at the school. It had kind of this creative vibe, and I just I got very interested in learning to play for real. I mean, really. So I had a teacher for a couple of years, and I played with these guys. They played more like kind of jazz rock, and they listened to Miles Davis and Weather Report and that kind of thing. So I touched, I messed up a bit around with that a bit. And I was also into the hard rock stuff. Van Halen blew me away when I listened to that for the first time. So it, and AC/DC. So that whole mix, all these influences came. And when we formed DAD, and we thought it was funny to play, to mess around with the country stuff, then I thought, okay, I got to figure out how to make this twang sound. And which is not, it's not easy. It's actually, it's a lot harder to get a good twang sound than it is to make like a big heavy guitar. and it takes some, and so I started to investigate that. And I thought it's there's so much great guitar playing in that area, the whole twang country, Duane Eddy and all that, all the, this whole style. I think it's great guitar music. So I just got interested in it, and I started to explore and see how I could do it. And yeah, when people listen to Sleep My Day Away for the first time, they, I mean, it paid off, I'd say, in the end.
Well, we're here, you know. That's
right. Yeah, we're here. Obviously, it paid off for us anyway.
Yeah.
No, so you guys are, you know, like I say, 11 years in between. You know, a long time. You have this out. Is there any thought about, you know, another album after this already, or are you just concentrating on this? Do you plan? I'm hoping you don't spend another 8 years. Is what I'm saying. Yeah. I hope we have more music from DAD, you know, on a more regular basis as a fan.
Yeah. Well, I really can't tell at this point what the future is going to bring. But I think for me personally, I'm just really grateful that we could finish this album. And it's a really, I'm very proud of it. I think it sounds great. It has some great songs on it. And this, when we play it live, it feels really good to, these songs, they're great for the stage. So I'm looking forward to do that and play a lot of the songs live for the next couple of years. And then I don't know what we feel like doing. I think these 8 years, that's a long time. It's also too long if you want to have a career.
Well, what is the, you know, I mean, obviously, the great thing is now, like I say, is that people, like, it's hard to find albums still. It was harder back in the day. It's still hard to find Soft Dogs or Sympatico, you know, if you're in North America. You know, they're still not really available to us, even on streaming services and different places. It's hard.
Okay.
So, you know, being out there regularly for people, I know for me, I'm excited, and I've heard from people in North America. Oh yes, they heard Risking It All, they heard No Hugo Left for the Pilgrim, and they're excited because this is available to them now, and they're hearing about this album, and they're seeing what's still available for DAD. So it's good that way. But I am curious though in Denmark and Scandinavia and Europe, this area. What has been kind of the anticipation after 8 years of how excited have people been that the new album is out?
There has been some anticipation and people have been very curious, but we haven't been away from the media as like we haven't been away in the way that we've been away in other countries. We've been touring a lot and played big festivals in Denmark, so it's not like we've disappeared at all. And it's there's a lot of talk about because we're not young anymore, and we've been around forever. And so it's like this: the media has this angle that can they pull it off? Are they too old now? And you know what I mean. So, but we just got released the album here, and it's gotten great reviews all over the place. So it took them by surprise actually that we could make this album, which is great. That we they didn't expect it to be like this. I think they're a bit surprised that it is a rocking album like this.
I know all your last few albums in Denmark, they've gone to number one. All the albums, I think your last three or four before this all went to number one. So, I mean, it's got to know. I mean, you got this, I guess, are you, I don't know, it's tough for me even, you know, even all the way over here with my Danish connections. Are you guys kind of feel like you're kind of an institution in Denmark at this point?
Yes.
Yeah?
That's kind of cool. But yeah. It is kind of cool, and it's I think it's an honor to have this position. Like, we've been called the national orchestra, the national rock band, but it's been more in the past than now, I'd say, because we are an institution, but we are not the. We've been having that position for so many years that, you know, it can't go on forever, and that's okay. Then new bands come and that's fine. But we are an institution, and a lot of people they tell us we do TV shows now to promote the album, and when we meet these people out there, they say that we are the soundtrack to their youth. When they went to high school parties back in the day, they listened to DAD. So a lot of people in Denmark, they have this connection with our music, which is, I think, is a great honor.
That's very cool, you know. And so you can know you did that to me in Canada, you know, halfway across the world too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's good for you.
That's right, and we're going to be with you for the rest of your days.
Yeah, yeah.
Just make it sound way worse than it actually is.
Yeah, let's see how long I last.
Well, we're not going to stalk you. We're just going to listen to you.
I don't know. I mean,
hopefully
I mean,
talk to you. Well, we might.
It's been so long. We should just consider stalking.
We might come and introduce ourselves at the Monsters of Rock cruise there, because you'll be on that one, and a couple of Florida dates. You guys already have a pretty busy schedule for your touring for the year, for the rest of the year. I guess it's a lot of promotion of the new album.
Yeah. The rest of this year is pretty much booked. Yes,
that's okay. You can come to Canada in 2020 then.
That's right.
Yes,
we'll can.
Yeah.
We'll be fine with that. We will travel in Canada for sure.
Yeah, cool.
I'm actually interested about your personality, like both on stage and off stage, because as I look on your Facebook page and I see your little promo videos, which are that black and white silent movie style, which are awesome. Yeah. You know, how much does that kind of translate over to the stage?
Well, these movies, on my bicycle on the bridge.
Yeah, just the personality and being willing to do silly.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, once in a while you get to do stuff like that, and that bridge is right next to my house, and it was my own idea to do it like that, and you know, that's one of the benefits being in a rock band, that you get to do silly stuff like that. So whenever I can, I do things like that.
All right, Mo, so now we know that that bridge is near his house, so we just need to find that bridge. Okay.
I know where that bridge is.
Okay, perfect. So
that's been quite a long time since I've had a chance to come to Denmark, but yes, I do know where that bridge is.
Perfect.
Do you know the Carlsberg beer from Denmark?
Of course.
Yeah. The headquarters of Carlsberg, and where Carlsberg is originated, which is on a hill in Copenhagen. I live right next to that, so now you know that too.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Just be ringing doorbells.
Well, thank you. I think that's about our time with you, unfortunately, because I'm trying to make sure that we talk enough about the new album, because I do want people to check it out. It really is such a good album.
It's great.
A Prayer for the Loud.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, you know, of course, I have a million questions. We kind of ended up not so much asking questions as just having a conversation, but that's probably because we've been listening to you for so long. It's just, you know, we know your music. We know your music.
Yeah.
I really would like, you know, give you a chance one more time to let people know. I mean, you guys, for instance, have a really good website, like
great
very good,
website. Yeah.
You know, history of the band for people that haven't followed you since maybe Risking It All or No Fuel, or I think you guys, for people speaking English, it's an excellent website to find out all about the band's history and music, cool, and just the different things. I don't know if you have anything to do with it or not, but I would very much encourage people to go to the dadd-a-d.dk website.
Yeah, we have a webmaster. She's called Asta. She's Swedish, and she's the one updating and keeping order on the website. And we're so happy to have her. She does a great job.
She does a fantastic job. And there you can get videos and, you know, and lyrics and, you know, like I say, history of the band is really great. Yeah. Anything else that you would like to promote to people besides, you know, going and buying A Prayer for the Loud? The first single you dropped from it was A Burning Star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to drop Prayer for the Loud as a single too. In a few days, in a few weeks, and I just hope that if people would listen to it and enjoy it, that would make me very happy.
Well, I think if you listen to it, then you would have no choice but to enjoy it, because it's that good.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And I just one last question. The first time you saw me bring out a bass with six strings, what did you think?
First time, pardon.
When you saw Stieg had a bass with six strings instead of four, what did you think?
Yeah. If he ever came out with a six string bass, I'll be really busy tuning that bass.
That's four too many.
Yes, four too many. You know, two swings is perfect for rock and roll. You don't need more than that. You can play the entire catalog of, you can play all AC/DC songs on two strings. No problem.
That is one of my favorite lyrics, six string bass. That you got.
One track mine and a two string.
It's two string. Did I say six string?
You said six string.
Oh my god! My brain is being two string. What the hell am I doing?
He will never bring a six string bass.
No, what the hell am I thinking? I know it's two string, and I got it in my own head. Well, it's early in the morning in Canada.
It is.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Please let the other members of the band know, that Canada, they have some support from Canada.
Yeah. Well, thank you a lot, guys. I hope we can, I'll hope to get by. So if we can come by someday, that'd be great.
Well, we're definitely, there's no question in my mind that at some point we are going to get the chance to see you. And hopefully when we do, we'll get a chance to hang out at some point backstage or whatever, because you know, we're the Canadian chapter of the DAD.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Last time I was in Denmark, I just missed you playing at Tivoli Gardens. So, I definitely am looking forward to getting out and seeing you guys. Thank you very much, Favil.
Okay.
Thank
you, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And my Canadian accent when I speak Danish, I know it's very strong.
Awesome, Jakob. Okay. So, thank you so much. All the best.
You. Okay, you too, guys.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye now.